Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's just 4 minutes till they're gonna start. So I'll switch it on now. Hopefully we won't run out of batteries. I think I'm going to... Silent.
Yes, it's there.
Are you worried on it? You see, smart thing. Yeah. Right now. You see the date was the 27th, eh? Okay, I am going to have to go to the WC, the toilet.
Yeah.
The recording is on if they start.
Okay.
People are chopping away. Eating.
So the recording is already on.
Yeah, it's on. Because it's 1 minute to the start of the meeting. I don't think they're going to start then, but I'm just going to leave it on just in case. And, okay. If they start in my absence, I'm not here. If they start in my absence, then put this, you just put the actual start time in there.
Okay.
If they start in my absence. Okay. Right. Wish me luck.
Okay, wish you luck.
Okay.
Yeah. so it's this is, so I'll get whoever's presenting will work with you. Okay, I'll go to him. Do you know where defense is? I haven't seen it.
I was just checking to see job title, organization.
Oh, I wanted to see who there.
Has the gentleman behind said.
Are you going to just
know
that?
No, I don't think. I think he's not.
He's not part of it.
Yeah. Like this woman here, she said no, she's parliamentary person, so she's not going to sign. Went to old me, that woman with the white jacket, she said, she's from EFF, Nichville Shabalala. Oh, she's presently put a P there. She's with a goofy party, but anyway.
I think that gentleman is Roots.
Hmm?
The other one. Cut his hair. I bet you think it's Roots. Roots. The one in front.
They are in a black suit. You think he is?
Looks like, but without hair.
Mm.
And then this gentleman.
Oh, yes. And
this.
So that was that one with the striped shirt, he's Lise.
Yes.
And it could be, and the other one next door is, what the weird surname, what's it? Praxis?
Yes.
Can I ask you, what do you study?
I'm doing my PhD.
I'm not even scared. I'm scared.
And the reason why I want to work in Parliament is that I'm very interested in socio-economic rights issues, like when they discuss issues of health, women's rights,
mm-hmm.
education, children's rights, poverty, things like that. Because it's around my area of study.
Okay.
Yeah.
The son identified those ones sitting there.
Mm.
The woman with the orange thing,
mm.
Who could she be?
The red one, eh? The red thing.
Yes. She could be in Tuanavi.
Mm.
Do you think?
Yes. But she doesn't have specs.
This one has specs.
I think this other lady is in Seke. This one in green. The one in green is in Seke.
Who is in Seke?
The one in
Seke. Seke. Oh, that's her, you say. I think you're right. You have a way of identifying these creatures. Okay, now, and the chap sitting next to her.
I can't see him. Oh, Godi.
Yes. Okay. But what is the APC?
No idea.
I feel like I was going to shout, but I'm a bit too embarrassed. Eh?
Mm.
And then there's this Mr. Boy. No,
not yet here.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, it is, yeah.
Hell, I think that's hell. Looks like hell. But I don't see anyone in hell.
Oh, it looks like the. The.
DH.
DTI. The DTI. The department.
I think it's the DTI.
It's the first person who's ever looked like. You know?
And the name. You can't even read the name.
Okay, Naido.
Can you begin? Just begin.
Don't tell Rasha that it is then.
Looking at Indians of all that.
Then, this one is the piece. Okay, this. Okay, he was Indian sitting there.
Hmm.
Then this one, M, whatever the surname is, is the first person there.
Hmm.
At the table.
Hmm.
And then this is the woman sitting next to him.
Mm-hmm.
She's a female. Mm-hmm.
No wonder the handwriting is good.
Uh-huh. Female.
Mm.
And then he got a guana.
With speckles.
Next door. Okay, he was next to the female.
Mm.
They've changed all these seating. You see the man now sitting there, well, I think he's going to put it right in front there.
Mm.
He is the DG of DTI.
Mm.
It's him. He was the last person sitting there. Okay. Mursa, you would never say this is an Indian, that's an Indian man. He's the one who looks white, who's looking right at you now.
Mm.
Okay. I don't know where they are. Again, this is... He's moved. He was sitting this side. He was Treasury was sitting here. TG presidency. Oh no, he has to sit in front now.
Mm.
Probably has to address this.
Oh, did they? Another person was coming.
Hmm?
Let me see who was
coming. It's like underwater.
I don't know who this one is.
Who came
I'm
in?
I'm going to lose the sun today, I can tell.
In the soup.
This one.
He's walking towards us. Oh no, that's not him.
Yeah, he's being greeted.
Okay.
Maybe it's this one. It's me.
I'm fine, I'm very well.
He was, used to be the chairperson of another
company. That's the one that I lost.
If it is him.
Causing immediate terrorists.
A chairperson.
Comrades, good morning. I know we should have started 15 minutes ago, but we're waiting for National Treasury officials who are who are on their way. I think someone is trying to find out exactly where they could be. So as soon as they are around, we will start. Angos.
All the public and all the I don't need to
are always by its C, so I don't understand this APC. I think it's a mistake.
I used to say NC.
Is this ever to have this right?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that man standing there next to the one with the green.
Yes, I think it's that one.
Okay.
The role that we have to play given the changed.
And then another one has come.
Structure.
Was, that guy was not there. I don't see him here. Maybe he's in Pepe.
You see, I don't often come.
You see the man next to the green lady?
Yes.
He has just come.
Okay. You can't see his face, can you? Oh, for people who don't see him. I know where she is.
Thank you.
play the whole or not? You, I mean, you don't have to, but it depends on you.
I'll stay for about an hour or so.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's also not stuff that you want to see. There's no health, there's no education, other issues. But anyway, it depends on you.
Yes, but I have to go back to him. We talk after here.
Okay.
So maybe about after, it's 9 o'clock? 9 to 11? 9 to 10, 10 to 11.
It's now 20 now.
So I'll go like around 11 o'clock. I'll go to 11.
Yeah, okay. Alright. So we've got to change the time because they didn't start at 9:12 when the chairperson spoke.
I want to give you my email address so that maybe after writing your report you share it with me. I know you're going to share it with the PMG website, but I might be able to access it as quickly as if you share it with me.
Sure.
Yes, so I want to give you with my email address.
Yes.
I'll give it to you now before I forget.
What you can do is just write it on here because I take this.
Let me try to write it in the clearest handwriting because my handwriting is not good.
Neither is mine. I mean, look at that. Pathetic.
So, first rate, I'm going to explain every name.
So, this is Daphne, and this is
it's
Agaba.
Daphne with an I,
Agaba.
And then this is Agaba.
Agaba.
So, Agaba Daphne at gmail.com.
Sure. Now, what does Agaba mean?
It's God gives.
That's your first name?
Yeah, that's my first name.
Okay, alrighty. God gives. Okay, okay. Not even on this list. I don't want this one.
So you say that you go to the presenter to get the electronic copy of the presentation.
Well, you can. No, not the presenter. And you sometimes you have to go to the people here to get the electronic copy. But I mean, I don't really bother anyone. Because they're difficult, and I guess it's to be understood. They will say, we will be sending it to PNG, so that's okay. So, just need to...
Do they eventually send it to PNG?
Yes, of course they do.
Okay, then.
PNG asks. There's actually a good relationship between PNG and Parliament.
Which is very good thing.
So they, yes, so they send all this. So what you would like me to do is to send it to you.
Yes.
After I send it to PMG.
Yes.
Yes. And then you'll see the difference because PMG still edits it and then puts it on online.
Yeah, that's good. So I will see the difference.
Maybe you won't see any difference. Maybe I'm that good.
Maybe you're that good.
I'm not. I'm terrible.
No, you think you're good. You wouldn't be here. I think you're good.
Okay, seriously? I'm okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. Which is all that is required.
You want to help yourself? You can help yourself to something to choose.
Maybe I can help myself to something.
Yes.
Thank you.
Sorry, is that Honorable Smith?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay. He's Mr. Smith.
And they're waiting for Treasury.
It is him, yeah.
I think the other day you went to under this lady.
Sorry?
This lady who has come.
She could, oh yes, you mean she could be
on the trial now?
Yeah.
She could be a spirits. This one. That one.
I think it's her?
Yeah.
But she's this one?
Yeah, but she, this one, yeah, I think she's the one.
Contact lenses maybe, huh?
She goes, oh, yeah,
purchase. How are things in Uganda now?
Better?
Yeah.
But you know, we had Konyi War. You've heard of Konyi? Northern Uganda insurgents.
Yes.
He's called Joseph Konyi. We had like him for over 20 years. But he was defeated and he's now he's gone away. He's in another country. He's now in South Sudan. So Uganda is relatively stable. But you know that the Great Lakes region, which is that region, there will always be a war going on at any one time somewhere. So in Congo, it's in Sudan, it's in Sudan, it's in, yeah.
It's okay, that's okay. Thank you.
So, where did you study from? Your
University? At UWC also. And then I went to London, University of London, Institute of Education.
For how long?
Institute of Education, a year. But I stayed there longer because I didn't want to come back here. And UW's, I did about two years.
So you, why did you stay there forever? Why did you stay?
I stayed
in London forever.
I stayed for a long time. I stayed in Russell Square, Harrow.
Were you working
illegally?
I can understand.
You've been London?
Yeah. So not lived there for a long time, just gone for conferences and workshops. But I always find many people who are there for years and years. I like this part. Especially when you're hungry. So currently, do you work anywhere?
Only PMG.
Comrades, I think let us go ahead. DG Trade and Industry. I think you were right in your initial position. It was an omen of things to come.
ministers, committee members, ministers. You'll have the ministers from the department.
Mm.
Right, may I once again request that we switch off our cellular phones, please. Because when it rings, even if it's on silent, it cancels the recording. So whatever is said when your phone is ringing will not be covered. Well, we were waiting for National Treasurer, but it appears that there have been some misunderstanding somehow, so they are not here. And we had hoped that because they are the ones who prepare the submission for us as a committee based on what has happened in your departments, they were going to lead the process of discussion or explanation, and the presence of the departments is merely and purely to give further clarity in case any is needed on any of the items, which would assist the committee finally when it sits down to decide on what needs to happen. Now, by way of starting, DTI. We welcome you. I think it's been quite some time. We've been missing you here. Welcome you. And I was just being reminded that the last time we met, it was on that Cipro. Was it Cipro? Cipro contract. And might be interesting at some point to find out what finally happened to it and where are we vis-a-vis that capacity that was not so correctly acquired and you as a department had to act to correct things. Have you corrected them? What has happened? But I'm sure those are matters we can deal with at some point. Maybe what we need to do for starters is to start by introductions. Let's know who is from DTI, let's know who is from Home Affairs, let's know who is from the Presidency, members of Parliament introducing themselves, and then we could then go into the discussions. DG.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me introduce the team. My name is Lionel October. I'm the Accounting Officer of the Department of Trade and Industry. I have with me Kumaran Naidu. He is the Group Chief Financial Officer, that is the DTI, and its 16 agencies. And then I have Shabir Khan, who is the Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Trade and Industry.
Okay, thanks. DG?
Thanks, Chair and the Honourable Members. My name is Nkuse Laplin. I'm the DG of the Department of Home Affairs.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Josephine Maya. I'm Chief Director, Finance and Assets at Home Affairs.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is George Khorekwang, Acting Chief Director, Revenue and Budget Management.
Honorable Chair and Members, my name is Tulane Mavuso. I'm the Chief Operations Officer at Home Affairs.
Okay. Thank you.
Your Excellency.
Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Members. My name is Cassius Lubisi, Director General of the Presidency.
Honorable Chairperson, my name is Leon Bota. I'm a Director of Budgets in the Presidency.
Good morning. My name is Kumuyisile Khaisala. I'm the CFO in the Presidency.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and the Members. My name is Glenn Zulu. I'm the Director of Finance at the Presidency.
Okay, thanks. Can we have comrades introducing themselves, members of Parliament, so we know this is the beginning of the fifth Parliament.
I'm Nyameze Lipuweli, Member of Parliament.
Please. Yeah, Member of Parliament.
Good morning, Tim Bradford, Member of Parliament.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mandisa Philiso Machoba, a Member of Parliament.
Good morning, Ntabise Nkunu, I'm a Member of Parliament.
Morning. My name is Saki Kekana. I'm a Member of Parliament.
Morning. My name is Vincent Smith.
Morning. My name is Kanyisile Litchfield Shabalala, also Member of Parliament.
Thanks. I'm Comrade Temba Goti. I chair the committee.
Good morning. My name is Sam Mandiwan, Parliamentary Liaison Officer at Home Affairs.
Okay. My apologies.
Honorable Chair, my name is Mozinjoko. I'm the Director, Integrated Governance at Home Affairs.
Good morning, Honorable Members, Chairperson. My name is Riaz and I'm Musa from Department of Home Affairs, responsible for parliamentary liaison and cabinet support.
Morning, honourable members. My name is Tembe Kile Plaki. I'm the parliamentary liaison, Minister of Finance and National Treasury.
Good morning. My name is Suraj Naidu, parliamentary liaison officer, Department of Trade and Industry.
All right. Thanks. Comrade, may you introduce yourself?
Good morning, Chair. My apologies for being late. And good morning, colleagues. My name is Mkule Gosle. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. I think, DG, well, we spoke briefly, but I'm sure we all are clear about the exercise of this process. That in terms of the law, this committee needs to process any unauthorized expenditure in department so that it can be processed out of your books. Otherwise, it remains there forever. And I'm sure there's no CFO who would want to have that in their books. Now, and we know it's old money. And part of the reason why we're starting with it in the Fifth Parliament is because in the previous years we'd start with something else and say we'll deal with it, but somehow time has always been a challenge for us in this committee, and so it persisted, and we felt we need to, you know, process it once and for all. And as you are aware, DG, we do have a presentation from National Treasury that did an analysis and even their recommendation. So we're hoping that they should lead in that discussion. But however, the funds, the finances remain yours, and you probably can even talk better to them than National Treasury. So to assist us as a committee to come to a decision at some point, I think it will be important that we go through this exercise, give you the opportunity. This time around, we're not starting with questions. Give you an opportunity to just explain the figures, the background, the circumstances. And for today, I think that will be it. Otherwise, in terms of what we do with it and how we process it, it's something that the committee will sit and deal with at some later stage. Yes.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts. As you've indicated, the matter before you relates to unauthorized expenditure reported by Department of Trade and Industry to National Treasury in the 2004-2005 annual report. And as you said, a request was made in 2010 by National Treasury to SCOPA to approve this unauthorized expenditure and charge it to the National Revenue Account. The items, the amount indicated of unauthorized expenditure is 37,379,505.54. There are four items relating to this unauthorized expenditure. I'll go briefly through them. The first one for 25,000 Rand is an arbitration award issued by the Commission for Conciliation and Arbitration, the CCMA, and relates to the dismissal of an employee who then challenged the department and received an award. And that was there's two awards and it amounts to 25,000 Rand. So that's a labor relations dispute between the department. This is the second.
That is the, in terms of this document, that is the last amount.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. On the letter of National Treasury. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
As you correctly say, as other debts written off. The first one on that list then relates to compensation in terms of a bilateral investment treaty. As you are aware, Honourable Chair, we have bilateral investment treaties with a number of countries where we undertake as a country to protect and preserve that property. This relates then to an award that was granted against government where police and security services failed to protect that property. An award was then made relating to 6,654,213 Rand. That relates to then a BITS treaty. The biggest cost, 31 million, written off, relates to something which is called the General Export Incentive Scheme. Now, GEIS, as it's called in short, is an incentive scheme that was introduced in 1990 by the South African government, and that relates to providing companies with an incentive to export. At the time this incentive was introduced, companies could receive this incentive in support on the basis of a claim and then supported by an audit report. In terms of the procedures available at the time, after 5 years after the payment was made, the department would send inspectors to verify that the incentive was properly given to the company. As I said, at the time, a number of companies which are listed, which we have found not to have sufficient documentation available to be able to prove that they were entitled to that level of incentive, and then claims was made against that company. So that was written off, and that amount relates to 31 million. The other matter relates to staff debts of 125,000. This relates to employees who were in the department, who resigned and left the department. And usually what happens is any money owing to in terms of bursaries or tax or S&T claims, subsistence and transport claims, that usually gets taken from people's pension then. This amount was not able to be deducted from employees, and that is the request. So, Honourable Chair, these four items, which, as I said, the bulk, the major two items is the one of the GEIS export incentive, and the second one relates to the compensation award with regards to Pomlani Lodge, which is under our BITS treaty. Those are the four items. We then requested in our annual report of the we wrote off this amount in our annual report in 2004. There was insufficient funds in the DTI's budget, and that is why it is classified as unauthorized expenditure, and therefore the request is now to SCOPA to write this off from the National Revenue Fund. Thank you.
Right, thank you, DG. Are there any questions for clarity on the presentation? Yes, Comrade.
No, thanks, Chair. Mine is on the General Export Incentive Scheme. I'm looking at the the explanation from the department. There are companies that the department is indicating that they could not be traced. I need some clarity, because I think that the companies that we are dealing with here are the companies that are registered in the database of the department. Now, if the department is saying the company could not be traced, what does that really mean?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my concern regarding the GDIS scheme is that I'd like to know specifically what regulation in terms of that scheme specified that the businesses in question would only be inspected after 5 years. So my question really is there a regulation in terms of that scheme that says that businesses may only be inspected after 5 years, or was it just an oversight that they were not inspected after 5 years? Because if they were not inspected by way of an oversight, then the question has to be asked is, was this illegality reasonably unavoidable? And if it was reasonably unavoidable, then we start to stray towards other categories of expenditure. Thank you.
Okay. Comrade Vincent? Yeah, we'll come to you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if we start with the 25,000 Rand disciplinary hearing, payments were made to the CCMA and to the union. What I would want to know from the department was, what was this individual disciplined for? And it leads on to my second question, Chair. You see, the second question, for instance, says, or if we go to the 125, I want to marry the two. If you take the 125, the reasons that were advanced were the debt was unrecoverable. I beg your pardon. The recovery of the debt would be uneconomical, and therefore you didn't pursue it. The debtor cannot be traced. The recovery would cause undue hardship to the debtor. If I just take that last one, it will cause undue hardship to the debtor. You know, I don't know that Parliament can accept that. When I owe Edgar's money, there's no thought of it's going to cause undue hardship to me, the ordinary South African. Why must government then think that because it's causing undue hardship to an employee who was paid, we then decide to write it off? I'm just looking at that last example. It's not acceptable to me, quite frankly. It's really not acceptable to me that it causes undue hardship. It does that to all South Africans. And the debtor cannot be traced. Maybe what we need, Chair, before we take decisions on this matter, is for them to give us more information. Government can't trace the debtor. I'm raising this, Chair, because for the past 15 years that we've been, certainly that I've been in Parliament, you find that officials would work for DTI, create problems in DTI, and resurface in Home Affairs next month, and create problems there, and when we have this type of thing, resurface somewhere else. So I'll just be interested in knowing who those debtors are, and if indeed they are still in the employ of the state. So that's the reason why I'm asking on that one. The first one is what I was linking to the first one. On one hand, we say it's uneconomical, so we write it off. On the other hand, the person goes to a disciplinary hearing. What was that disciplinary hearing? Was that also not uneconomical? In other words, why did we pursue the one? and then have to pay the union and CCMA, and on the other one we say it was uneconomical, and therefore we decide not to pursue it. For me, these are contradictory things. That's why I was asking the question, what was that disciplinary hearing for? Because, Chair, I would imagine that before I embark on a disciplinary hearing as a manager, I would have to do some sort of due diligence to find out if I've got a strong enough case. And if I have a strong enough case, then I would pursue it. If I don't have a strong enough case, then we must take other measures. I'm asking it because it seems to me, and I don't have the facts, that's why I was asking for the facts, it seems to me that this went to a disciplinary, the official went to the CCMA and to the union, and probably won it, because if he had lost it, then why must we pay for it? If he won it, then it means that it becomes our cost. I'm hoping that you're following me, Chair. And if it is becoming our cost, why do we then pursue something, or was the due diligence done in terms of, is this case winnable? Too often in our other committees, we find that, and maybe just let me put it to our colleagues in the government departments. I won't mention the union, Chair, but I serve in many other committees. You know, the attitude of the unions is that we'll win all these cases. Let them take them to CCMA, let them take them to wherever, we'll win all these cases. And I'll give you examples of departments where that is in fact true. So the point that I'm making is that if we approve these amounts, Chair, we must approve them on the basis that there was a sound case, not that we just take them to disciplinary hearings, we lose the case at CCMA, the unions go smiling, and taxpayers and South Africans generally suffer the consequences of it. 25,000 might be small here, but if you take all government departments collectively around this type of matter, it's quite a sizable amount of money. And I think if you look after the pennies, the pounds would look after themselves. So whether it's 25,000 or 25 million, it's the principle that I think that I'm raising, Chair. So I would need more information on those things before I can make a decision.
Liz?
Thank you, Chair. Sorry.
You've had your turn. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, this is supposedly written to National Treasury by the Department in 2010 regarding something that happened in 2004-05. So there was a three-year hiatus there, and then apparently National Treasury somehow forgot about it, and it arrives here now. Director General gives us a little bit of detail, but there's absolutely no motivation from that I've got from the department. Perhaps other members have got, but I don't have. What Honourable Smith was quoting from is work I understand was, maybe it is, I don't know actually. Yeah, no, I'm wrong, yeah. That is the National Treasury, it's not our researchers' work. So, Mr. Chairman, there's been a huge delay in this matter. And National Treasury themselves will have to come and speak to us about it. But the information that's in Annexure A is far too limited, and I was going to say the same thing as Honourable Smith. There's no ways that we can make decisions based on this. In the first place, the DG talks about awards to employees, whereas the Annexure A refers to payments to trade unions. Now, they may well have channeled the payment through the trade union, but I think that would be most irregular not to pay the ex-employee directly. So I'm confused about this. You know, why was the payment made to the trade union? So I would second Honourable Smith in saying we need a lot more detail, both on the 25,000 and on the personal debt. It cannot be right that we're simply going to, well, the department's already written off these amounts on the basis that is stated here. Mr. Chairman, DG says that it was written off in 2004, and because there was not enough money, it's authorized, unauthorized. But surely there was no budget for this kind of expenditure. So is it not unauthorized also because it was unbudgeted for? Not simply because there was not enough money. And we should be dealing with it in either case.
Okay.
In terms of the incentive scheme, 31 million, we really do need to know what efforts were made to recover these debts. If they were written off in 2004, as the DG has indicated in his address to us, not a hell of a lot of time was spent trying to recover them. If they were written off in 2010, then 3 years were spent trying to recover them. So I'm not sure what is going on here.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, then in terms of the lodge, this money was paid out on the basis of an award. Where was this award made? In The Hague? South African courts? And on what basis was the award made? I mean, if it's on the basis that property wasn't protected, well, then we all should be putting in claims, not on the basis of some treaty, but on the basis of our constitution. There's a constitutional imperative for the state to protect our property. And so, you know, I need more detail on all of these, Mr. Chairman, before I can agree to anything.
No, that's fine. Comrade Boy, Comrade
Chairperson.
Comrade Chairman.
Chair, you know, I do think we are going to be having a bigger problem. Because you have considered, as the chair of this committee, that Parliament has not done its work. Parliament has been leaving this report to lie low for some time. And it means that we first have to take responsibility ourselves in how we've handled the matter itself as an institution. And quite clearly, you said we should just take a report today so that we can go and deal with our own details amongst ourselves, that how to deal with this particular matter from now on. But I'm sure there's been presentations in the past, and those presentations, what has happened then in terms of Parliament, is something that we have not been put on par about, that what happened to those that were in the committees throughout all these years. So that if you want to start saying we are reluctant to decide or to come to conclusion on these matters, we should then also, as members of Parliament, take the full responsibilities that what has happened in the past, have there been presentations, and what happened to those presentations, before we go up and beat the departments themselves. So I'm just asking, Chairperson, that why don't we stick to what we have said, that let's take reports, and then when departments are gone, we'll do a reflection on what it's about, how Parliament in itself operates as an institution, rather than starting to want to dig and never come to a solution. But these reports have been done in the past. And if they are not here, what are we going to do as parliamentarians to come to a decision about this particular matter?
All right. Comrade Kuno?
Comrade Chair, I actually agree with my colleague Honorable Boy has said just now. But I think when you started giving us space to ask questions, you said clarity-seeking questions. So that's what we are trying to do, so that when we apply our minds, we have questions that hang in our heads. And I also wanted to ask a clarity-seeking question on GEIS, that, I mean, I know that when you apply to get a company from CIPRO, they ask for all your details. So, and these companies were untraceable. Do we have mechanisms now in the DTI that are able to trace companies and to know if this company is still existing or not. Thanks.
Litchfield Chabalala. Then we'll have the department responding.
Thank you, Chair. I hear what Comrade Boy is saying, but I think for a person interfacing with this for the first time and as a taxpayer, you just don't know where to start or what to say. I think, like Comrade Smith, I cannot accept that the recovery of debt causes undue hardship to a debtor. We pay our debts whether we are unemployed or employed. They call you every day and you have to find the money somehow. So why, when people owe government, they can just get away with it? I'm also interested on the 25,000. Why was the person dismissed in the first place? Was it an unfair dismissal and the department is not disclosing that to us? I would be interested in knowing. Number three, the irrecoverable general export incentive scheme debt. Again, I don't know what to say, because I think it is the job of the department to ensure that whoever they pay this J's amount to are people that are credible and you know, traceable. Now, if some companies shut down and the director relocates to Taiwan and all the reasons that we are given here, I just ask myself that an ordinary South African, when they look at this, what do they say? When they go to the bank, they try to get a loan. They are not getting a loan because of their skin color, and there are people just getting loans and embezzling them, and then we end up with a debt as the state, and we must just say it's okay. You know, this thing has been recurring for too long, so let's just close it and resolve it. For me, it's unacceptable. I think same with the Phumlani Lodge thing.
No. I thought that we are focusing and we are considering that this report has been lying there for some time. And departments are here to come and give an account. And none of them are saying that they don't want to account. If we are going to reduce that the fact that they come to account to something that says they are just, as if they have been doing a last affair about how they are approaching this thing, it's going to create a little bit of a wrong impression. We should not create the wrong impression as the members of parliament when departments are coming to account. They are here to account about what is going on, Chairperson. And they are not saying that they are not willing to present what has happened. But Parliament must take responsibility for its own inactivity.
Well, finish.
Thank you. For me, I think it's the same with number four, the Phumlani Lodge claim. Maybe I need more clarity. What actually led to Schleifer, I hope I'm pronouncing this name right, claiming against us for not protecting his business? Isn't it the task of a business to protect itself? Maybe I'm a bit lost here. I think every business, for starters, takes insurance, you know, against riots and all those sorts of things. Now, you invest here, you don't do that, and then when things go wrong, we must sit with the debt. I think, again, I'm a bit confused what is going on there.
That will be the absolute last, Comrade Smith, so that the officials can respond.
Thanks, Chair. Treasury is not here, are they?
No, they're not here.
Just for clarity for my sake, maybe time has passed me, Chair. What Treasury is asking for here is for us to condone the unauthorized expenditure, and the way that it would be funded would be a deduction from the current budget. Is that what it means? Because it says it's going to be debited to the direct. I just want to understand the practicality of it. If we approve it, does that mean, DG, that if you've asked for 100 Rand for this budget, for instance, I'm using it as an example, is this going to be the first amount deducted from that 100 Rand that you've got for your budget, or how do we fund it? I'm asking that question because it will then have a...
No. I mean, he's talking.
No,
I said when it finished, the officials must respond. Otherwise, we're going to have endless questions.
No, Chair, the point is very simple. We're trying to get clarity about the status of the document that is provided by Treasury, and Vincent is responding to that. Yeah. And Treasury is not here.
Yeah, what I'm saying is...
No, Chair, you must really live within the collective of all of us.
Yeah, no, I'm saying give him the space to finish his question. All right, okay, fine. Finish, comrade.
No, Chair, it's fine. I was just asking it for clarity in terms of, but let's leave it. That's why I was asking if Treasury is here.
No, because
Treasury must respond to...
No, comrade. In this one, the last paragraph, the recommendation is there from National Treasury. They are saying we must approve it as a direct charge from the National Revenue Fund. At least in terms of what they've written. Now, in terms of them explaining and justifying that, then that's where you have a problem of them not being here. Yes, Comrade.
Chair, you see, you have not, when you started the meeting, you said Treasury is not here. And you didn't clarify what is the standing of their views in relation to this particular meeting. And in your presentations, even in trying to brief us, you have said that the final decision lies with Parliament. Now, I don't know. Treasury is not here for us to be able to get proper clarity about what their own point of views are. And you have gone ahead with the meeting, and can you please, let's resist and desist from using Treasury's point of views until Treasury is here in itself to come and clarify what they are saying.
Can we have the response from the official?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me firstly apologize for not being comprehensive enough. On the matters, as I said, as you know, we were before this committee in 2011 on this matter, and I think in that meeting and in that presentation, the National Treasury, as I said, comprehensively dealt with all the matters, and then we supplemented the explanation. But so that was done in 2011, and that's why the matter is again. And now be before you. Let me then try to give some detail. With regard to, as you could see from the GEIS payments, there is a number of points where the companies cannot be traced. As I said, many of these incentives have been paid more than 20 years ago to these companies. Many of these companies have, in a sense, closed and relocated. So, for example, many of these companies were located in what was called the decentralized areas, like Botshabelo, Babalege, Atlantis, or Dimbaza, and so on. Many of these companies were located here. As you can see, there are a few which are owned by Taiwanese and so on. These companies, as you know, are have closed down. There are some companies who have settled. Many companies have also settled those claims. But the question was asked about what was the procedure and why was the inspection done over 5 years. I think that's absolutely right. There's no legal. It was operational procedures of the Department of Trade and Industry at that time. If I can give some context, this scheme was introduced in 1990. When the first Minister of Trade and Industry of the Department, Mr. Trevor Manuel, came in, he immediately, because of the fraud, corruption, and bad way in which it was administered, the scheme was closed down. And therefore, the recovery started. Currently, we don't pay out before the inspection is done prior to the payment. So we have an inspector in the department where, as I said, you first undertake the investment. You build your factory, you construct everything, we don't pay you anything. Once you have completed that payment, you then, as I said, you raise that money from the bank because they know that the state will compensate you. And then after the construction is completed, we inspect that the factory stands there, it's done, it's up and running, and then we pay on that basis. So, as I said, we don't have this problem currently. Of where we're looking for documentation as in now. So the problem is when these inspectors went round to these places to verify an already paid claim, many of the companies say they don't have those claims anymore. They don't have the proof that they export. Remember, this was an export incentive. So if companies, remember we had sanctions before, so many companies, in order to encourage, as you can see, there are companies here like Anglo American Farms, which was exporting wine to Europe. They received an incentive for that because they were, as I said, adding to export revenue. By the time the inspectors went, the company says, we don't have those records anymore, those export orders of the bills of exchange and so on. So, as I said, many companies, again, it's not maybe that they didn't incur the, and that's why to take them to court, and as I said, all this state attorney, these things are only written off after we get a permission or authority from the state attorney. The state attorney says, if we appear in court and we have to prove that they were not entitled to this payment, we don't have proof and there's no records and so on. So that's why it was difficult to pursue these companies. And that's why, as I said, many of them were settled, but many of those claims were done and some payments was received. But as I said, that scheme is now closed. It was cancelled after 1994. And as I said, we are busy with those matters. It was in the 2004 annual report, after the request and after consultations with the state attorney, that we decided to continue now to pursue these companies. It is not, in a word, it's not economical. We will spend more time to recover the money than actually exists. It was for that reason that it was then written off in the department's annual report of the 2004-2005 year. So it was in that context that I said that was a clear written off of a debt or something which the state was in entitled to. But I can reassure the committee that currently we have much clearer operating procedures with that, and we as I said, we don't pay out before doing inspections, and we have a fully fledged inspectorate within the department. But we also use, as I said, independent inspectorate sometimes where we are not sure about certain companies. We would do extra inspections to that. On the question of, I think again, the other big claim was of the Pumlani Lodge. In terms of our bilateral investment treaty, I think this one relates to Spain. We have there is Article 3 in that bilateral investment treaty, where, and it's a reciprocal treaty. It's a treaty which protects investors from another country, and similarly South African investors when they their investments abroad are similarly protected. So it's a reciprocal bilateral investment treaty. That treaty says that, as I said, that we will take reasonable steps to protect and secure an investor's property. In terms of our security services, we would at least detect or investigate any criminal activities. It would be the police would inspect, the police would arrest, or would, as I said, detect and then at times prevent criminal activity. But it's just reasonable steps is required, and any state has that responsibility, as was mentioned. It's the responsibility of any state to provide that level of protection. But in this one, the reason this foreign company had a claim is because they had a bilateral investment treaty, and in terms of Article 3, they are given that protection. So they went to the South African courts and used that article as saying that they were entitled to this reasonable level of protection from the South African state. Now this, there was vandalism and there was criminal activity at this lodge. And it is in that sense that the person then couldn't operate their business. So they claimed against the state for their losses of profit, loss of being able to operate because of the criminal activity, and there wasn't reasonable protection granted to them in that. So in that sense, the South African court then found against the South African government, and the Minister of Trade and Industry was then under court order obliged to pay this award. That's the 6 million. Then turning to the employees and so on, this case relates to misconduct of employees, of the two employees. As you know, at the time you make a decision to take action against disciplinary action, of course, there is, in the view of management, there was misconduct, and the employer is entitled then to take disciplinary action against that employee. Of course, due process was followed in terms of the disciplinary inquiry. As I said, the employees were unhappy with the decision, went to their trade union, and the matter was taken up at the CCMA. The CCMA did rule against the department correctly and found, as I said, I have not since 2011 studied the award in detail, but there could have been procedural grounds for the dismissal being found unfair. I would assume, as I said, that could have been one of the grounds. In any event, the arbitrator ruled against the department. We therefore have a award that the department is obliged to pay. I don't think that one can make an assumption that we erred, but I could table the awards to the committee and we can look through it. But as I said, many, many cases are usually found just on procedural irregularities. But I think one shouldn't, the department, as I said, has a very, very few cases of dismissal. Most of our cases, when we do act against employees, it is for fraud and it is for misconduct. And in those cases, as I said, we pursue them vigorously because we have a zero tolerance for that. As far as there is long-standing disciplinary procedures in place, which is done by the DPSA and our Divisional Bargaining Council, where we appoint independent chairperson procedures. But as I said, you can, it is a number of cases with the CCMA. These two, we have many other cases have been unsuccessful, or where employees have gone to claim unfair dismissal, but they have lost those cases against the department. But as I said, these are the two cases where we do have an award, and that's why we declared that in our annual report in 2004, 2005. Then, with regard to the payment of claims, I'll ask Mr. Kumra Naidu just to explain the question of the claims. But definitely, as I said, we now have a very, very, we haven't since this time, since 2004, reported any matters, because now we definitely, if any employee leaves, we ensure that we take whatever is owed, we take that immediately before the employee leaves. But in any event, and as you say, we do adopt a policy that every cent that is owed to the state will be recovered and nobody will be allowed to. So I take the sentiments expressed by the honorable members that definitely we will not, as I said, this is a historic case, but if I could just ask Mr. Naidu to just explain that.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the honorable members. with respect to the claims of employees, it relates to a number of issues. The firstly could be bursaries. If you award a bursary, if a person leaves, the person was meant to serve so many years within the department in order to, in terms of working, repay back that bursary. But a person leaves before then, they have to pay part of that bursary back to the department. And generally what happens when the person resigns, either the person, we take it off the leave pay or any pay that's due to the individual concerned. And if there isn't sufficient funds, we go to the pension fund. And if there isn't sufficient funds, the pension fund, we raise a debt. But we follow a process of collecting from the individual. We even take it up to the stage of the state attorney that takes it to the courts. And then they will advise us. In fact, they consider the matter and they say, is it advisable to take it to the court? It depends on the costs. And then they will advise us whether we need to write it off or not. Then the other issue is S&T advances. You give somebody an advance if they travel, and then when they come back, they're meant to submit their claims or return whatever unspent funds. And if they resign within that time, we'd follow the same procedure to recover those funds. But what you'll find is a lot of these monies, you'll find the initial capital, plus we add interest. From the time we raise the debt, we add interest. And you'll find part of that is interest. What you'll find is a lot of the capital has been settled, but the interest is still outstanding. And that's what's being asked to be written off. So that is a procedure we follow. In fact, it is still the same procedure we follow, but we're much more vigilant now. What we've done is, in terms of the department policies, we've now given staff a set number of days within which they must submit their returns. And when it comes to bursary, if they resign, we make sure that we take sufficient steps well in advance to ensure that those monies are collected. And these are very, very old claims. Even those awards that were made in 2002, written off in 2004. So it's a very long time ago. Thanks, Chair.
Just to add two further points on this one. The first is, Mr. Naidu pointed out, it's the last resort. But as the accounting officer, we don't write off the debts. It's only when the state that we refer, as I said, we raise a debt and we pursue the individual. It's only when the state attorney, we hand it over to the state attorney to recover the money. It is when the state attorney comes back to us and says, this is for whatever reason, it's on the advice or the direction of the state attorney. But as Mr. Naidu says, this is not happening in the department anymore. As you said, we've tightened up all our processes, but especially the one now, if you travel now and you don't return the money within the specified period, it just comes off your salary of the next month. So there's no waiting for people to return and so on. So as I said, we have tightened up our systems substantially to prevent this from happening. But let me assure the honourable members that, as I said, we immediately, if say anybody resigns, we then take the money immediately from people's outstanding payments due to them, their leave pay and so on. We then go for the pension money. If it's not there, we go for suing the person for the money. And it's only when the state attorney says it is for whatever, as I said, they have their protocols when they then do that.
But TG, how do we consider staff debts and other debts as an authorized expenditure? How do they become an authorized expenditure?
I think they become unauthorized expenditure in the sense that we issue a debt to recover the money from the employee. So as I said, most of the time we would recover the money. And in those instances where the state attorney advises us that they cannot recover this money or they do not want to pursue the matter further, we then have to write it off in terms of our annual financial statements.
Chair, just on the unauthorized portion of it, the reason this became unauthorized at the time is that we didn't have sufficient budget to cover that expenditure. So it was written off, but there wasn't sufficient budget.
Okay.
It became unauthorized.
All right. You want to make a follow-up?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to debate the insufficient budget thing. If it was budgeted for or not budgeted for is also an issue. But, Mr. Chairman, I'm a little bit concerned about the robust approach about taking pension money and so on. I understood that had been outlawed and that you can't do that legally anymore. Am I misinformed?
As I said, currently the system is that is money owed to the state, and as I said, usually the step is the first step is we take it from normal money owing to your leave pay and other money and so on. If that avenue fails,
you probably have not had of late an incident where you had to look at the pension money of some.
No, and then, as I said, in the common, I don't know what's the latest in labor law, but currently...
Look, DG, what I'm trying to come to is that if that's something you have not come across, then let's leave it. Otherwise, we'll merely venture into the area of speculation about
it. It may be something that they haven't come across, but what we are tasked to do here is to make sure that there are measures in place that this doesn't happen again. And the DG is explaining to us the measures in place to prevent it happening again. And I'm happy with those measures, provided they're legal. I've got a concern about attaching monies from pension funds in particular, but I think it even applies to leave and other things.
All right. Yes, complete.
No, Chair, you see, this is why I was saying that Parliament must advise itself on how to deal with this particular matter. Though these things are long outstanding, and departments have been moving on and picking up different experiences, and for us to be able to improve the system, how do we deal with it? If you'd say to us, this issue has been long, it's been coming with with sanctions and all those things, it's a very old issue. I mean, it's 20 years down the line, and Parliament has not done its own job, and it become a little bit of a problem that now what is it there that we could be able to say to the citizenship of South Africa? What is it that we could learn and be able to advance our system with? But this information doesn't put us on that path. It leaves us a very more weaker, because we are trying to relook at the system that has been in existence long before what is happening now. And the current DGs, in their own experiences, might not have even been part of some of the issues that have been put in front of them at this moment. And it's a parliamentary problem. It's not a problem that has been created by departments. And that's what we must owe up to as Parliament itself, as an institution, and do our own improvement. We can't be running around in circles.
Right. Can we leave DTI complete, Vincent?
Yeah. No, Chair, I agree we can leave DTI. I run the risk of making my colleagues very angry in the department, Chair, but you will guide us. You know, I really am wondering, Chair, whether it might have been premature to call our colleagues from the department, because we've not processed this thing with Treasury first, ourselves. I know you were saying that ultimately they have to respond to it, and I accept that. But my proposal, I'm wary, because I know that tomorrow we'll be accused of wasteful expenditure by bringing so many of our colleagues from Pretoria down here, and then asking them to leave because we haven't quite processed it. But I really do think, Chair, if we continue in the vein that we are continuing now, talking to colleagues here, and we're going to have another meeting with Treasury afterwards to do the same thing, I wonder which is more fruitful and pragmatic. We know it was not their fault that Treasury isn't here. But I do think, Chair, that somehow, or my proposal, let me put it to you this way, is that this meeting be adjourned, I think is the correct word, for another date, where we are sure that when we have that meeting, we are able to deal with Treasury, who are a major stakeholder, and also with the department, because what all they're doing now is just giving us some sort of report. They'll go away. Treasury will come and give us something else. We might call them back again. I'm just wondering, Chair, the pragmatic part of it. And I do know that it's a difficult decision, because they are here now. We could listen to them, but I'm almost sure we're going to have another session after we've heard what Treasury has had to say. And also what Honorable Boy is saying, Comrade Nyami, that we need to look at all these things at some point. So my question then to you is it really adding value to have this discussion for the sake of discussing?
Well, before comrades raise their hand, my take was that the responses that the department is giving assist us to better understand what happened. And National Treasury will not give us anything better than what the departments are giving us, because anyway, these things happened in their departments. So my expectation was that after the clarification from DTI, we are not going to call National Treasury again. It will have clarified us to be able to take a decision on the resolution that we must send to Parliament. There is a recommendation from National Treasury on what should happen. It is there.
If they were here, they were merely going to take us through what they've written here. And if there's any clarity-seeking question, it will have to go to the department, not to National Treasury. So if there are issues about the unauthorized expenditure, the best people to explain it is the department, not National Treasury. So my expectation, my understanding is that DTI has so far explained and responded to all the questions. They've clarified the issues. Additional information that we've sought, they said they will bring, so that when we sit down and say, what do we do, we'll be able to have the information that we need. That's my understanding. So can we continue and allow DTI to leave? And just the additional information on the... Yes, comrade?
Chair, unfortunately, we are going to have a problem. I think I agree with Honorable Smith. And some of us, we are new that is in this parliament, and we are seeing these issues for the first time. And definitely we need some information if we are to make correct recommendations to Parliament. Now, to rush over this issue this way, I think it's going to be problematic. My proposal would be, maybe before we resolve on Honorable Smith's proposal, that we adjourn this meeting.
He has indicated that he's satisfied with my explanation.
Come again?
He has indicated that he's satisfied with my explanation.
Can I finish, Chair? Please. Maybe we adjourn the meeting and we sit as members only and discuss the approach. Because to be honest, if you listen to individual members, even our approach is different on the matter, this issue. And in that meeting, then we can decide as to whether we are sending the departments back or we are continuing. But for us to have a meeting where we are just asking questions for the sake of asking questions, I don't think it is adding any value. Because I agree, at some stage we'll have to invite National Treasury to verify some of the information that is before us, before we make any decision. Please, Chair.
Yes, comrade.
Thank you. I think I'm going to, like Comrade Vincent, almost feel that I'm dividing the committee, but I think I agree with him. I at the moment even feel like these departments are being protected, and it might not even be Comrade Boy's intention to be doing that, but for me, from where I'm sitting, it sounds like he's saying to us, don't ask them. It happened when they were not even there. So I agree that we adjourn and fight this amongst ourselves and come with something that we all have agreed upon. I really support what Comrade Vincent is saying.
No, I had indicated earlier, members, to say that this is the fifth parliament and there are different experiences that we are sharing, and some of us do have the experience and some of us don't have the experience. And in how we do and we should run parliament, we should make sure that all of us are balanced. We learn something out of it. And that's why I had been of the view that it's important to listen to the unauthorized expenditure. It's been an outstanding matter. But quite clearly, it does need the whole of parliament to be on board. I mean, this is a good team of members of parliament. They have a deeper understanding of issues, but also we should be able to learn something out of the process itself. And quite clearly with this type of exercise, as far as it's gone now, it has not been able to provide a lot of lessons for members of parliament when they come to decision to be able to provide good evidence of how they arrive at those decisions. That's why we are not, what Vincent is proposing is not that we are against it, Comrade Chair. We are saying that it's important that we do, as members of parliament, give each other an opportunity to learn something and to be able to give a better understanding to parliament. We know that SCOPA has been around for a long time, but there are things, and Vincent is one of those long-standing members of the committee itself. But what is important is that all of us must be on par and be able to deal with issues, so that when we write reports to parliament, we write something that we are convinced that it does help. You see, it's important, Chair, that you take us on as a collective. It's not, when you say that Treasury is not going to come, it's your view, it's not our view. We might recommend differently as the collective in the committee. And for me, it's always important that you live within that collective and you guide us within that collective. Because it's in our interest to work as a collective with you. But if you are going to make arbitrary decisions, you are not going to get our cooperation. Because you must allow us to say what is the best thing to do for all of us so that we maintain the integrity of the committee itself. But we can only maintain the integrity of the committee when the whole collective understands the issues and when the whole collective is allowed to reflect properly on the issues that are in front of them. As of now, we are quite clear. This exercise is not helping us. It's not taking us a little bit further because there is a report here that has been done by Treasury. We don't know how much to agree with Treasury or not to agree with Treasury, but Treasury would have to come and give us a sense of exactly what they have been saying, how do they arrive at those decisions. We can't be guided by what is written in the paperwork. We need to have the physical man and we'll be able to talk to him. So it's not going to be like that, Chairperson, unless you want to run the committee alone. And I wouldn't suggest you should do that. Give us the opportunity and give us the chance to be on par with you. You've been long in the committee, but give us a chance also to be on par with you on a number of issues. On this issue, we are not in par. And we need to be protected against that.
Comrade Lengua?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, I appreciate the responses being given by the department, and I think that they are necessary that we receive them. But that's just their side of the story. I'm really interested, Chair, to have Treasury here explain their recommendation at the very least, because I'm not convinced that they say that there's detailed information in the annexures. I'm not convinced. What, a table detailed? I really doubt so, Chair. We can only understand what is said there in a proper conversation. I think that does justice to the department. It does justice to the process that we are doing here and allows us an opportunity to make an informed decision. And an informed decision is really not going to materialize in the absence of not having heard the third part of the story, and that is National Treasury. So, I appreciate what the department has said, and I think they've given detailed responses, but I think that a decision cannot be made on the basis of what they have said, because the recommendation here is not from them, but from Treasury, and it's Treasury that must come and explain their recommendation and the information, you know, their understanding of the information to make sure that we make an informed decision. So I would strongly support the view that we get National Treasury here and then for them to explain themselves. Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to give a view about whether we adjourn or don't adjourn, but if we do adjourn, and it's as a consequence of National Treasury's failure to arrive today, then may I suggest that the expenditure incurred in bringing all these officials from Pretoria be charged against the National Treasury budget and not their own individual departmental budgets?
All right, yes, Comrade Kuno.
Thank you, Chairperson. Why was National Treasury not, why were they not invited in this meeting? I think we have somebody from Treasury, and some of the questions that we have here for clarity, I think he can give us that clarity. But I agree with members that we have a problem here in Parliament as members of Parliament, and I think it's important for us to adjourn this meeting. Discuss amongst ourselves what are we going to do, because I think we need to have an approach on how we're going to tackle this thing. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Well, National Treasury was invited. And what matters is they are not here. All right. The sentiment seems to be that if National Treasury was here, they would give a counter view or confirm the explanations that the department has given. So for DTI and so for the other two departments that are here. I think what we may need to do, because then it has implication for the other two hearings, means that we need to be able to, I think as Comrade Kuno said, sit down as a committee and and agree on how we want to approach this and do so as a collective. I know that word and I like it and I underline it so that it applies to all of us. We don't only talk it, we live it and we exercise it. I thought I wanted to...
No, Chair, I just want to ask a question which I think would be beneficial for all of us here, or it was a recommendation, to actually find out why National Treasury is not here. Because I think that, I mean, that takes us for granted. It really doesn't help if they... I mean, my understanding is that you waited for them to arrive, and you started in their absence, and would appreciate that they walked in at any moment, but they're still not here. So I think we also need to follow that up, and it's for the benefit of the departments that are here, that they understand why they were kept waiting and why National Treasury is not here.
Yeah, no. Comrade, let me overrule you on that one and continue. Yeah, I was talking about collectivism and underlining that word so that we all operate by it. And, well, this is our first sitting as a committee. We still have many more to come. So it is correct that we need to do so from a correct perspective and a correct foundation. And I would hope and love that as we move along and encounter these kind of challenges, we unite around them as a collective once again, so that we're able to do our work and we're able to move forward. I think let me leave my condensed comments at that. Let me leave my pregnant comments at that. I'm very certain that from our side, in terms of myself and administration, we've done all the things that needed to be done the right way. But whatever challenges we have, let's see how we deal with them. So, yeah, unfortunately, we're dealing with fruitless and wasteful expenditure yesterday. But let's hope it is not, because it will have assisted us. I'm sure you have a sense of what members may want to know when you come, what level of detail you may need to, you know, to bring with you, so that the process can be quick, can be simple. I'm sure that we'll communicate in due course. When, unfortunately, DTI looks like you still have to come back. I almost said, can you leave? But it looks like so that we can deal with this thing. So, yeah, I think it's fine, comrades. Let's adjourn. We'll still decide ourselves, amongst ourselves, how we want to take this forward. Thank you.
But we have a discussion. How are you doing? I'm all right, thank you.
They'll give it to PMG when they're ready to give it. If they're not ready to give it now because of the way the discussion went.
Yes.
So
yeah.
They'll give it to PMG when they are good in it.
So you're going to capture the minutes as they were? You're going to capture the minutes as they were without complete
clarity. Well, I will capture the minutes based on what he said. What DDI said. As the report.